What I like about David Mitchell's translations of the Psalms is that they're always unexpected. You're never quite sure how he's going to translate things, but they're also very authentic. Often we tend to take Old Testament prophecy and we soften it a bit, but you get real raw prophecy with David Mitchell's translations. Today we come to the last in a series that we've been looking at and during our Sunday. We started this series in the middle of October, and it was looking at different people who had encountered Jesus and the difference it made in their lives. So we began, there was a card that sort of went with it. We began with the rich young ruler. His need, all these people's needs are slightly different. So when it came to the rich young ruler, he was really quite fearful about dying. And that's what drew him to Jesus. Then we looked at Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus had everything, but he still felt something was missing. And that's what drew him to climb that tree, so he could just be a bit closer to Jesus. And then it was Peter. Remember, Brad preached about Peter? Peter had really messed up badly, and he was just longing to know that Jesus so loved him. So he was longing for love. And then it was Nicodemus, the Pharisee, who came at night to see Jesus, and he was really wanting certainty in his life. He was longing for truth. And then two women. The first, a woman who was burdened by guilt and ended up pouring out that precious ointment. Remember that. And then the second woman last week, the woman who was desperate for healing, and she touched Jesus' cloak. And so the reason we chose these people to look at for this series was because all their needs are different, and yet all their needs are met by Jesus. And the risen Lord Jesus is still able to meet all those different needs today. And so today we come to the last encounter in our series, when we meet someone who simply feels that his life is going nowhere. Someone who feels his life is going nowhere. If you want to follow in the church Bibles, you need to find page number 973. Page number 973. It's not a very long passage. It's in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 9. And it's the one down at the bottom right-hand corner of the page, the calling of Matthew. So it's Matthew's Gospel, chapter 9, beginning at verse 9. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. It's one of my favorite lines from the Bible. To begin with, you may well ask, how is it that we know that Matthew felt his life was going nowhere? I mean, make no assumptions when it comes to hearing people talk about the Bible. Make no assumptions. It's always good to ask questions. So how is it we know that Matthew felt his life was going nowhere? I mean, after all, he was quite a successful person. He had a good, safe, secure job. He worked for the Romans. His job was to collect taxes from the local people bringing goods to market. So at the entrance to the town, all these people trundling their goods into market, there would be Matthew, bright and early. He had the luxury of a booth to shelter his head from the sun. So he'd be sitting there, he'd have his table. He'd be sitting there at his table. Not sure if he'd have a chair or he'd just be sitting around it. I don't know. He'd have his ledgers, you know, his accounts books, his documents, so that no one got past him. You know, he'd tick their names off. Have they? If they're in the market, we need to make sure. He'd have a money box to put all the taxes in. He'd probably have a couple of minders, you know, heavies, just one on each side of him, just so he didn't get any nonsense. And also, their presence would sort of encourage people to come into the tax booth if they tried to sneak past, perhaps. So there he is. And he knows he's not very popular because he's a tax collector. Now, nothing against tax collectors, if there's any folks here. I'll explain a bit more about, well, we all probably know how tax collectors were regarded in Jesus' day, but I'll get on to that later. But he knows he's not very popular. And I imagine his attitude is, well, it's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it. And if I didn't do it, I'm sure someone else would. So that well-known phrase that we often hear in justification. So how do we know that he feels his life is going nowhere? How do we know that? Well, two reasons. The first is because of the way he reacts to Jesus. And the second is what he then does. Okay? So just imagine the scene. There's Jesus, and he's walking along this road, and there's a big crowd with him. There's his disciples. There's the religious leaders are always there to keep an eye, make sure he doesn't overstep his sort of boundaries, or they write it all down, you know, so they can accuse him later. But there's also a massive crowd of hangers-on who just love being with him because things happen, things are going on, they'll see amazing things, they'll hear amazing words, and they're all very excited because they're with him. So he's going along the road, and this big crowd's following, and suddenly, unexpectedly, he stops in front of this tax collector's booth. And there's Matthew. He suddenly thinks, oh, what's going on? And he looks up, and there's Jesus, and there's this massive crowd. And Jesus is looking at him, and Matthew's holding his breath. In fact, the whole crowd is holding their breath. What's he going to say? Is he going to give him a broadside? Because that's what everybody really wants him to do. Is he going to give him a broadside? He's going to say, you miserable, sniveling, collaborating, traitorous little cheat. You know, it's amazing what your imagination does when you start thinking of this scene. And what is surprising is that he doesn't say any of those things. He simply says, Matthew, follow me. And of course, the crowd, when they heard this, would be stunned. He's a tax collector, for goodness sake. And the disciples would be stunned. They're thinking, hang on, this is more complicated than we thought, following Jesus. Does that mean that he's going to be following? He's a tax collector. You know, all these thoughts are going through everybody's minds. And Matthew's stunned as well. What? But Jesus says simply, follow me. And what happens next is even more shocking. Because, and this is why we know that Jesus, that Matthew felt his life was going nowhere that day. Because he doesn't just look at him in astonishment and or laugh at him or get his minders to go and sort him out. He sort of stops. And it's one of those life standing still moments. He stops. I can imagine him stopping. And at first he's saying, did he really say that to me? And, you know, you can hear the silence. What's he going to do? What's he going to do? And then I can imagine Matthew looking at all the stuff in front of him and looking at this booth over his head and his minders and looking at the faces of people and then looking at Jesus. And going, okay, I will. And he gets up and he follows him. And he leaves everything behind. He leaves his booth, which he's probably paid for himself. He leaves his minders. He leaves the money box, he leaves all the documentation, he leaves his livelihood, he leaves everything. And it's not like he's been hypnotized or something, he's just wandering off in a daze and he'll soon come to his senses, come rushing back. He actually does this of his own free will. He knows what he's doing. Come on in, come on in, come on in, plenty of room, plenty of room. And off he goes. So why does he do it? Well, this is where we just have to use our imagination. We've got to imagine that we're Matthew. Why would he do something like that? Something so shocking and unexpected and radical. Well, I can imagine all those years when he's a tax collector. I mean, I'm sure he was something he was very good at. And all those years using his position and his privilege to make more and more money. And using that money well, he's got his booth, he's got his minders, he's got lots squirreled away, he's got, you know, a big house somewhere probably. But at the same time, all these years, going to that stall at the gate, getting more and more depressed, and thinking, is this what it's going to be like? All those years, knowing that he's despised by others. And yes, he tries to justify it with lots of things. But you know, you can justify the choices you make in life only to a certain point, and then the justifications start to sort of fall apart. You know, the weaknesses really... he knew really that this wasn't the life that he would have chosen. And yet all those years feeling, well, there's nothing I can do now. I'm stuck. I'm a tax collector. Everybody knows I'm a tax collector. I'm a sinner. Nobody likes me. Where would I go? What would I do? I can't do anything else but this. It's the only job I'm good at. So that sense of being stuck. And then suddenly, Jesus is offering him something different. A chance to start again. And I'm always reminded by this passage about a couple of stories that Jesus once told. The two wee parables that he tells, there's the parable of the hidden treasure that a man stumbles across in the field, and the pearl without price, which the pearl merchant who knew what he's looking for had been searching for all his life and eventually found it. And the thing that both of those parables have in common is both the man who stumbled across the hidden treasure and the pearl merchant, when they found these things, realized that they were worth more than everything else they possessed. And those parables are Jesus talking about his kingdom, his way of life, following him, being part of the way he sets things up, doing the things. So following Jesus is worth more than everything else that we possess. So the first reason I know that up to that point Matthew felt his life was going nowhere is because the moment he's given a better option, he jumps at it. The moment he gets that chance, he jumps at it. The second reason is because of what happens next. Because what he does next, I think, shows how seriously and how profound the change is in him that day. What he does next is he invites Jesus to his house, and then he invites all his friends to come and meet him. And I don't think he does that because he wants to show off, or he wants to show how much he's changed, or anything like that. I think the reason he does that is because they're his friends. And he doesn't want them to miss out on what he's just experienced. He really doesn't want them to miss out. And I can imagine the sort of conversations that took place in his house that day. So all these people come in, maybe he's seen some the day before, or the week before, or the month before, but they're all coming in. So Matthew, great, thank you. Thank you for the lovely party. What's the celebration about? Why are we rejoicing with you today? And Matthew's saying, well, I've changed. I've decided to stop being a tax collector, and I'm going to follow Jesus. And I can imagine all his hardened, hard-bitten tax collector and sinner friends going, have you been drinking? Are you all right? And he's going, no. I've found something that's worth more than all these other things. You should try it. It's amazing. Of course, all this triggers a conversation between Jesus and the Pharisees. The inevitable conversation between Jesus and the Pharisees. And I'm glad it does, because the conversation actually produces an image, which I think is a really powerful and life-giving image for the gospel. And I'll come back to that in a second. But first, let's just take one long last look at the Pharisees. The word Pharisee actually means separated one. That's what Pharisee means. That's the root of the word Pharisee. And I think that tells us a lot about the Pharisees' approach to life. They believed that being religious meant being pure. And one of their basic tenets was that in order to keep pure, you had to keep separate. You had to keep away from Gentiles because they were impure. And you had to keep away from sinners because they were impure. And in tax collectors, they ticked all the worst boxes because they worked for Gentiles, so they're having constant contact with the Gentiles. And also they were crooks and cheats and sinners. So you definitely had to keep away from tax collectors. And so when you read the name tax collector in the Gospels, that's what you've got to remember. So Jesus going to Matthew's house and having a meal with all his tax collectors, I try to think of how something similar that might help us. Imagine your minister and your Kirk session decided to go out clubbing with all the drug dealers from Southeast Edinburgh. You know, it's that sort of thing. All the moneylenders and their minders. We all had a party. It's that sort of thing. Righteous people didn't associate with these people. But listen to Jesus' response, and this is where we find that image that I love. In verse 12, on hearing this, Jesus said, "It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick." So it's that image that Jesus is like a doctor who is simply offering a miracle cure for people who are stuck, or lost, or needy, or helpless, or hopeless. He's got the miracle cure. He's the doctor. You know, we get so worried about talking about our faith in public these days. I mean, don't we? Unless, obviously, we're Amarata. Who's quite happy to talk about it. The moment he hears someone speaking Farsi, he'll start to... Well, no, actually, I know it's not quite as straightforward as that. But we get so nervous in the West about talking about our faith. You know, we don't want to give offense. We're scared people will think that we're judging them, perhaps. Or we're just being intrusive. I mean, faith is a private thing. And why should we be forcing our beliefs on others? I mean, doesn't everybody have a right to believe what they choose to believe? Is it not just a bit over the top? And so we get quieter and quieter, and we hardly ever talk about it at all. And that's because we've got the wrong image in our mind of what we're doing. We've forgotten this image that Jesus uses. He doesn't use the image of, well, everybody's got a choice, so you just got, you know, and everybody, but he says, what you have is worth more than everything else you possess. And what you have is a miracle cure. Now, why, if you have a miracle cure, why on earth would you not want to share that with people? I mean, imagine if you had a miracle cure for cancer, say. Wouldn't you want to tell people about it? In Jesus, we have a miracle cure. Think of all the people who would just love to hear about it. Think of all the people who would look at us and say, why have you not told us about this? Why would we ever want to keep a miracle cure to ourselves? So, what have we learned from this encounter? And what are we going to take away with us today? Well, here are my thoughts, okay? Here are my thoughts. Firstly, that being a Christian means being someone who, like Matthew, is willing to follow Jesus. And this does not necessarily mean that we have to leave everything behind. Yes, Matthew left a lot of stuff behind, but there are other stuff that he didn't leave behind. He didn't leave behind his friendships, for example. The only things we need to leave behind when we follow Jesus are the things that stop us from following Jesus. So that obviously begs the question for us all. Is there anything in our life that is stopping us from following Jesus? My second thought. If Matthew hadn't followed Jesus that day, we wouldn't have Matthew's gospel. And there's a lot of really good stuff in Matthew's gospel. But remember those two stories that I shared, the story about the hidden treasure and the pearl. They only occur in one of the four gospels. Guess which one? They only occur in Matthew's gospel. And I can imagine as Jesus told those stories, and he probably told them quite a few times, all the other disciples would have sort of thought, oh yeah, that was a good story, yeah. But it's Matthew that writes them down. And I think the reason he wrote them down is because they meant so much to him personally. And the third thought, and it's a thought about Christmas. As I was saying at 9:30 this morning, yes, today is Advent, so we are allowed to talk about Christmas now, okay? Although, surprisingly enough, lots of people have already had their Christmas parties. You know, it won't be long, I think, before we'll be celebrating Christmas in August. Can you imagine that? Whoa. But anyway, today is Advent Sunday. It's the day that we remember the coming of Jesus as a baby and also that he is coming back again to call us home, all of which I think puts a little note of an urgency into this talk of sharing this miracle cure with people. And Advent, these 4 weeks before Christmas, in my mind, are always the attractive weeks. They're weeks of attraction. There's so much going on here, and we're getting really good at it, and we've got lessons and cows and memorial services and Christingles, and we have Panto on Friday. It was fantastic. And, you know, and so there's lots of things. And the reason we do them is we hope people will be attracted to come to them. And people are attracted to come to them. Over the next few weeks, there'll be, I don't know, just I know in the last week, building up to Christmas with the Watch Night and the Christingle, there are hundreds, even thousands of people come through our halls in this church. So it's the attractive season. But it can also be a missional season. And I think this is important. It can also be a going out season. Because Advent is you know, you hear the Celtic spirituality people talking about thin places where you're sort of more aware of God's presence. But I always believe Advent is a thin time. It's a time when people are more open to the idea of God and more open to the possibility that there is a God who cares about them and who loves them and who can help them. I think that's more possible in the month of Advent than it is in any ordinary month of the year. And so wherever you are, you will be in situations where people will have that conversation. It might be the office night out. It might be the concert. It might be the people invited around to your house, you know, your friends, your neighbors, your family. And in the middle of it all, because we're in that thin time, that window of opportunity will open up for you to talk about this precious cure that we've got, which is actually what Christmas is all about. And they maybe need to know about. And it's interesting how good we are at moaning at this time of year. I won't ask you to put your hands up, but you know, how many moany conversations about Christmas have you been involved in already this year? Oh, carol singing in September. Oh, nobody knows the meaning of Christmas anymore. You know, all those sorts of conversations. You never have those, do you? No. But along with those moany conversations come conversations that are tinged with sadness. You know, oh, another year's gone. Oh, my life's still the same. You know, thin times when there's opportunities to just ask God's help, and he will help you. Just point people to the real reason, this miracle cure that we have. That in Jesus, in the risen Jesus, we have someone who has a cure. He has a cure for things like people who are scared of dying. He has a cure for people who are feeling there's something missing in their lives. He has a cure for people who are longing for love because they messed up. He has a cure for people who are longing for truth. He's a cure for people who are weighed down by guilt because of something they've done or their way of life. He is a cure for people who just want healing. And he is a cure for people who simply feel their life is going nowhere. Jesus has a cure for all of these things. And the risen Lord Jesus is with us today. Shall we pray? I'm going to go through that list again, and I just want you to think in your mind as I go over each of these different types of people or situations, if anyone comes to your mind, does anyone come to your mind when I talk about people who are scared of dying? Or people who are feeling empty? Or people who are longing for love. Or people who are bewildered and just want a bit of certainty. Or people who are burdened, weighed down by guilt. Or people in desperate need of healing. Or people who feel that their life is going nowhere. If anyone has come to your mind, pray about them. Pray about them now. And be assured that God loves that person or those people even more than we do.